Welcome to the Cognitive Rampage podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. If my voice wasn't deep enough on the podcast already, I'm sorry if I just went all Barry White. I had an eventful weekend and my voice went with it. So I'm going to sound like I'm sort of yelling throughout this podcast, but let's just say I talk too much and maybe it's a sign, right? But couple things to tell you about. In case you missed the video I put up, the second edition of the Cognitive Rampage, that book will be out. I had to delay it about 30 days. Like I said, it's a virtual mentor of mine. I don't want to put him out there, but there's a great possibility he may endorse the book, blurb about it, et cetera, which could change the whole game. So I wanted to push that back 30 days, wait on him, but also revisit the theory a little bit more. So that book will be out on Amazon here in around the next 30 days. I'll keep you updated. Dollar Mental Health Club as well, changing the paradigm of mental health. Training and teaching tools and mental strategies for a dollar a minute, changing it. I'm not saying F insurance companies anymore. Okay. I'm just saying, changing the paradigm. Right now we're hiring. So if you're a life coach, if you're in school for mental health, even if you're a counselor, or even if you're in school for psychology or something, it's a great side job along the way to get your feet wet. We are hiring now. So, just go to the website, dollarmentalhealthclub.com. You can see where you can apply there. That we should be launching probably in March or April, but that's coming. Last but not least, drink my co-tea. Go to drinkmycotea.com. I drink it every day. My boy Alfred and them down south. I love it, man. Probiotic mushroom, but like I always say, it's the clean water. 2.5 pH in that water. It's hard to find clean water more and more these days. You can ask some people in Flint. Shit gets bad. So check it out. Go to drinkmycotea.com. It's good for you. Now, my guest is Mark Quinn McDonald. You may have seen him. I know most of the fans here on TCR are Vice fans and Vice News fans and watch that as well. But I caught a piece that they did on Mark Quinn, and I didn't know how to feel about the program because you know me. I'm an activist. I'm anti-system. Let's do it, right? I'm a radical. I don't believe the system in place can change the system, nor will it. So I have that view, but there is some logic, I thought, in the program. So I'm going to let Mark Quinn explain that program. And I don't know where he's at, what he's chose. But before we get to that, Mark Quinn, welcome to the show, brother, man. Please. Oh, man, I'm getting right into it, man. I just want to get to talking to you, man. So welcome to the show, first off.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, man. I really feel honored and I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
As I watched, I said, Vice could not pick a better person. I mean, they're amazing. And they picked the perfect person for that. I mean, before we get into that program, what you went through, what about you, man? Tell me about your life. You know, give me that biography, that personal power narrative. You know what I mean? Where you come from? What's it been like?
Born and raised in the South Side of Chicago. I've pretty much been all over Chicago for the most part, everywhere from, you know, the poor communities, always in middle class to the middle class communities or whatever, lived in Gresham, Chatham, and all the way to Beverly and Hyde Park, on the east side of Chicago, all over. What can I say, man? I'm a product of, it's funny, I'm a product of the activist movement here. I'm an activist in Chicago. I'm a martial artist here in Chicago. I have a martial arts school. I'm a mentor. I work with several different organizations and programs. It's funny, you know, interesting hearing you talk about being an activist and a radical. With me, it's interesting dealing with that whole concept of myself being that way and then having a conversation on, you know, should I become a cop? You know, it was really, 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 really an interesting question when it was posed to me, you know, a friend of mine. So I'm going to just jump right into it, if you don't mind, man.
Go for it, man. Go for it.
People are wondering my age. I'm 38 at the moment. Though I may look a lot younger, I have a background in, mainly in education. I also teach at a high school here, a charter, what do you call it? I hate this term. What kind of school? What do they call this school? they call it alternative school.
Oh, Jesus.
Alternative school. It's a school. They give it that name, which gives it a connotation of bad children when they're not bad at all. Not at all.
You just, man, you're a beast, man. My brother was a teacher for 20 years and still is, and he focused on alternative schools.
Yeah.
And just, man, you're listening so much just at 38, man. But they picked the right person, man. Wow.
Well, and then also the cutoff for the police department here is 39. So let me explain what happened.
Okay.
I'll start from the beginning. I wanted to be a cop when I was young, when I was a kid. My family, a lot of my family members are police officers. My uncle was like one of the coolest dudes I ever seen, man. He always was plain clothes, had a 9mm Beretta in his back, you know, on some Eddie Murphy style, Beverly Hills Cop type stuff. And I used to think that was the dopest thing I've ever seen, man. I used to say, oh my God, that's incredible. You know, I just thought it was cool, man, you know. And then you see all the movies, you know, when you're a kid, I'm a product of the 80s in some ways. You know, I think the 80s is some of the dopest times of my life because I was a shorty and I had no responsibilities, but whatever. And I think the movies were really good back then. But I used to see the Die Hards, the Beverly Hills Cop, and I connected my uncle and his partners and my family, my godfather, all to that. It wasn't until I got older, you know, that I started having my own personal experiences with the police when I became a teen. You know, I didn't, when I was a kid, I didn't know anything about the whole racial thing. You know, I didn't understand the whole black and white thing. Hell, I didn't even know what black and white was. Like when I was 6, 7, 8 years old, man, I would have thought you was a black dude. I just thought we were all the same people. You know, I'm dark.
I still get that a lot, man.
Yeah, man, I'm serious, man. I'd be like, yo, I had to ask my mother. We was dropping off a friend of hers at work from a party, actually. It was a coworker of hers. I said, Mom, is he white? She's like, you don't know the difference? And I was like, nah. You know, she was like, yeah.
Wow.
But what's crazy is that my grandfather, if I show you a picture of my grandfather, man, it's funny. I'm going to show you a picture later, man. My grandfather looked like a straight Italian dude. Like, you'll be like, and my grandmother looks like an Italian woman. So, you know, and she just passed, too, at 103. So, wow.
Shout out to grandma. How'd you do it? Yeah. See you soon. Wow.
Take it to the hospital to her doctor's appointments, and they think we're pushing around this little old white lady. And I'm like, nah. Yeah, it's just like, you know. So I didn't really know that, man. I didn't know that, you know. And, you know,
isn't that crazy how we don't know that, and then our society just teaches us what to hate?
Bro, this is where the conflict comes in. So when I did the Vice piece, let me just break off and I'll come back. When I did the Vice piece, that's something I explained. I explained that. It's interesting, you know, it's multidimensional, but it's interesting how society teaches you who to love and who to hate and what love is and what hate is and what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And so, anyway, going back, teenage years, started having experiences with the police, and those experiences weren't necessarily so positive. And I'll say this throughout my time, even up till now, I'll say 8 out of 10 times if I get pulled over, only 2 are going to be positive. The other 8 are going to be real heavy and hectic. And it's nuts here. Like, I live on 40th and Cottage, what's called 40th and Cottage Grove, right? I ain't got a problem with telling people that. That's a decent area. It used to be a very, very bad area. If you're not familiar with Chicago, there was a gentleman here by the name of Jeff Fort. He created a gang, called the Black Peace Stone.
Yeah,
and then he started the Arukans. I literally live maybe a block and a half away from where headquarters were. So, and now that area is all, that was all the projects at one point. Now they're all $500,000 to $1 million homes. So, I live over in that area, dude, and it's like, yo, this is crazy. But on that same strip, on Cottage Grove, if I take you, 20 blocks going south. Dude, you'll see police squad car, squad car, squad car, patrol, squad car, patrol, all up and down Cottage Grove. So when I get stopped on Cottage, they automatically assume that I'm a part of these dudes or I'm a part of something or whatever because of the way I'm dressed, the type of vehicle I'm driving. And it's never necessarily positive. It's always that hard ass, you know, that hard talk. You know, they say in the academy, they're supposed to learn something called verbal judo, pretty much on how to speak to people, you know, and that's bull. They use straight hard style karate.
Yeah. Yeah, like, the whole son thing, the whole boy, the whole shit.
What are you doing around here? You know, where you going? You know, where your driver's license? And I'm like, hey, I'm just coming from work. I don't give a fuck about that. I want to know where your driver's license is. Just like, man, calm down. What's the point of that? So I began to have a hatred for the police. They set me up a couple of times. Could have lost me in the system. My mother will tell you about that. She was freaked out. And if you look up my record, you'll see I have nothing but traffic violations. And when I say traffic, I may have 2 speeding tickets, but the rest are, tinted windows. Jeez. You know, they made me serve a day and a half in the county jail. If you're familiar with Cook County here, they made me serve a day and a half in Cook County for tinted windows.
What the fuck?
Know? Yeah.
Whoa. They fucking took you to jail for 24 hours for fucking tint?
Tint, bro. For tint. Yes, indeed. Matter of fact, they did that to me twice. The first time they did it, they took me to a district called the 6th District. They made me sit in there overnight. And it was like, yo, the desk sergeant said that you fools gonna learn a lesson today. And I'm like, who's you fools? You know, and so all because I had tint. Y'all gonna learn about that tint, bro. And I'm like, oh my God, you know. And I was hard-headed. I was like, but I ain't getting rid of the tint. But what happened was, this is how I ended up. But you know what? Let me because I want to make them seem totally like the bad guy. I was at fault too. I mean, I'm gonna keep it 100. I was at fault too, brother. Here's what happened. I got the ticket in possibly 2007, 2008, maybe. What happened was that I was working at as an admissions advisor for a school, a university.
You dangerous man, you. You dangerous, dangerous man, you.
Exactly. And what happened was my great-grandmother had passed. Her and my grandmother about the same age. She had passed in Mississippi. And I missed my court date to go for the tinted window. So when my daughter was born, I have 2 daughters. When my oldest was born, she might have been maybe 2 weeks old. And her mother wanted some food. And I went out to get her some food. And I was driving and I was caught on my cell phone. And the plainclothes officers pulled me over. And he was like, man, you know, you got a warrant out for your arrest? And I was like, what? For what? You know, I was really stuck. Like, for what, man? And he was like, he said something. And I was like, they could tell what it's for. And I was like, it was issued back in 2007 or something like that. And I was like, what did I do? And it was just like, oh, yo. I was like, you know what? I think I know what it is. So, and let me tell you how cool they were. They could have impounded the car. What they did was I had bought some food. I said, listen, man. I said, I just had a baby. I said, my child's mother is hungry. And I'm literally 3 blocks away from the house. I said, let me just get this food to her. So they put me in the squad, you know, cuffed me, put me in the squad. And they drove my car to the house and gave her the food. Like, you know, but we got to take him in. So they were really, really cool. Now, Pete.
I'm going to stop you, bro, because that's you being nice as fuck. Because... Oh, good for them that the good Samaritan decided to allow you to feed your child. Okay. They don't get a fucking cookie from me from doing what you're supposed to do. Cause they still took you to fucking jail on a 6-year-old bench warrant over fucking tint.
Right. Don't tint windows.
I said it. Fuck them.
No, hey, no, no, listen.
You're nice, man. You're nice, man.
listen, let me just say this. I wasn't always so polite about certain things.
Like, oh, there it is. Yeah, you said it, man. You said
I wasn't always so polite about certain things. A friend of mine who lives in New York, he has a dojo in New York, martial arts school.
What's the name of it?
TCK, Tensions Championship Karate.
Cool.
It's in the Bronx. The dude is literally a legend in sport karate. His name is Jody Tension. He's like a big brother to me. And his whole piece was, your cue, you have to make sure that you're living your culture. Whatever it is you're teaching your children and you're teaching your students, you got to make sure you live in that. So I can't be, yo, what up, dude? Yo, fuck me. You know, and then at school, then I'm expecting the kids to be like, them to say, yes, sir, no, sir. And I've always been a yes, sir, no, sir dude, but it's just been, you know, I was a little rough around the edges at one point. And so I just had to get tailor-made just to make sure that I can be adaptable in every situation, and I can reach many more people. Because at one point, man, I'll tell you right now, man, I was really rough around the edges. But anyway, back to the story. They hooked it up because,
dude, I'm stopping you because I'm impressed with the humility, man. A lot of people don't exercise that, and you said it when you started. I was at fault too, you know. So I just like how a lot of people would judge immediately, you know what I mean, based on what's happening. But the humility there. And I took martial arts for a long time, and so many people get caught up in the idea of it's just beating people up or self-defense when it starts with a philosophy.
Yes, sir. It's not that. First of all, people need to understand one thing. If you, I don't care what city you're in, what part of the world you are in, listen, man, put your children or get yourself involved in martial art class. And I'm not saying this to promote myself or to promote anything. I'm just saying it teaches you about making the proper adjustments, not only when it comes to physical confrontation, but also when it comes to just verbal or just anything dealing with life. It teaches you how to play chess. You know, it helps you with those self-regulating components to bring you back to your center so you don't flip out and pop off. I'm not saying that you're not going to get emotional, but it will help you bring yourself back to the logical side of things.
Is that what it did for you?
It does. Yeah, man. Man, every day of my life. Listen, man. When I was in the, when they locked me up, right? They locked me up when I was in the county. I'd never been in the county before. I know my father was turning mm-hmm. around in his grave, man. I never been in the county.
For 10.
My father was locked
for
up.
Fucking for fucking 10. Fucking 10.
And, dude, they was in there. I'm in the bullpen. And they, what they do is they stack you. Now, look, man, I don't know. Only thing I know about slavery is what I've read and what I've been taught in school. Okay. And based off of what I've read and heard and the movies I've seen, this has got to be at least a percentage of it. First of all, man, the way they talk to you when they get you out, I'm like, yo, this is nuts. But it's whatever. I went to military school. I've been in a dojo. Ain't nothing harder than my instructors and nothing harder than the drill sergeant-ass individuals that think they tough. All right, whatever. It's nothing. You know, plus I've been raised on the block. Y'all don't scare me. I know killers and I've been around killers and I've seen death. Y'all don't scare me. But that, so words don't bother me. It was the abuse that I saw that was in there that threw me. I was like, oh, and then it's the dudes that want to run their mouth thinking that they super tough. They want to try to fight you because, you know, but what's funny is the majority of the guys in there that saw me, no exaggeration. I had clean cut, fresh lining. You know, I was dressed real nice. It was like, yo, bro, hey, yo, dude, what you in here for? And I was like, tinted windows. And I'm talking about some hard ass dudes. Like, tinted windows, man, what the fuck? You know, you ain't supposed to be in here. The whole place, the whole bullpen liked me immediately because they saw me go sit in the corner. And my martial arts instructor taught me this. He said, listen, he said, just be calm. People will be able to read your energy. I'm telling you, people are going to be able to. It sounds like some movie shit, but it's the truth. And I swear to you, a couple of them walked up and be like, yo, man, assalamu alaikum. And I was like, I was like, yo, Islam, man. You look like you're a Muslim, man. And, you know, I actually grew up in the Nation of Islam at one point. And I was like, yo, no, I'm not in the nation, but I am, I did spend some time with it. Yeah, I could tell. Hey, what you in here for? And I swear, it was super cool. They was just like, yo, you ain't supposed to be in here. You're not supposed to be in here, man, not with us. And I'm like, I know. Everybody in there got half, like, $100,000 bail. And, you know, you got to pay 10% of that. So that's 10 stacks, $10,000 and $50,000 bail. I'm the only one in there that had a $3,000 bail where my bail was actually $300. I was the only one in the bullpen. And it was like, yo, this is crazy. And so anyway, I don't want to harp on that too much. But the stuff I saw in there, man, was a little nuts. And so I was like, yo, this is crazy. And what happened was when my mother came to help bail me out, along with my martial arts instructor, they was like, yo, we don't have him in the system. We don't know him. He ain't in here. And they done had me in there for a day and a half. And I'm still not in the system. So my mother was like, nah, you ain't losing my son. She went completely bonkers. Like, nah, you ain't losing him in the system. Y'all tripping. He's in there. And if it wasn't for her going off and raising all type of hell and having the sergeant come down and say, McDonald, you down there? You know, and I was like, that's me, sir. And, just to go back to answer your question about the self-regulating part with the martial arts, there was a dude in there that was threatening cats and acting a fool. So I literally sat in the corner, closed my eyes, and made up my mind like I've never taken a life before, but this is where you're in. You talk shit. Everybody talks shit. Man, dude ain't gonna touch me. I'll kill him. You know, when you upset about something. Man, I whoop such and such. I'll do this. But I literally had to contemplate taking life. It was like, yo, this is crazy. Yeah, so
no, to stay there, man, a lot of people don't understand because they're never really put in that situation. And people that haven't been locked up, that haven't seen that, when you see the animals sometimes, there's a few people in there that should be in there that are fucking out of their minds and looking at 2, 5, 7, 8 life terms. And people don't understand when you're out in the Serengeti like that and those lions are walking by, you have to be prepared. And
yes.
And what you bring up, man, a lot of people will never experience unless, you know, they're in some scary place, but they can always get away. But when you're there, man, and you really have to go, I may have to do something I never wanted to do.
Right, right. So pretty much after that, man, a few things happened to me. One, I took my art even more seriously. I started studying even harder. I became a vegetarian when I was like 13, 14 years old. I was studying all type of books. Like I told you before, I was raised in the Nation of Islam for a bit. So I'm reading all type of books, Message to the Black Man. And then I got Dr. John Henry Clark over here. And then I got Malcolm X's biography over here. And then I'm reading Ivan Van Sertima's books over here. And then, you know, all these different Black authors and scholars. And then I'm reading, you know, different philosophy books, the Kabbalion and all these different religious books and spiritual books, because I was trying to find my way, man. I really was. But I really started taking it even deeper when after that situation. And I got into chess real heavy. When I mean heavy, heavy. And I started playing chess super heavy. So when I started playing chess, I literally played chess every day. Every day. Because I would work in the evenings. So I would spend, say, from 11 a.m. to maybe 4 p.m. literally every day for 7 days playing chess. And like to the point where I got married to my daughter's mother and it would piss her off. But she was like, yo, this is...
Hold on. Most wives are arguing about Xbox and you're
playing... Dude, first of all, you're playing chess, man.
I'm a huge chess fan. I've been playing since I was in second grade. I still play. I look at life like chess. We'll play one day, man. I got this app we could use, man. But I love it.
I'm with it. Look, bro, listen. Hell, I was gonna do the podcast at the chess at the chess club. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna get caught up and want to play a game or something. Let me explain something to y'all. If y'all ever been to Chicago or New York chess, it's like being in the dojo, but it's a little bit more even psychologically demanding. And what I mean by that is that in Chicago, don't nobody talk. I don't care what sport it is. Nobody talks stuff like chess players. I had a chess player tell me, a week ago, he was like, you're going to take this raping. And I'm like, whoa.
What the fuck?
What is that? I'm over here raping this bitch. And I was like, oh, my God. And good, you got to be humble because I've seen dudes want to fight. Like, I'm seeing guys like, yo, man, you don't know me like that. This other thing is like, hey, man, if you can't take it in here, man, you might as well just go ahead and leave. Because these old men and some of these young men, they like family. They going to fight with each other, ride with each other, and they going to let you have it on that chessboard. So, and what happened was I had to learn strategy. I had to learn emotional control, just like in a dojo. But what chess caused me to do, chess elevated my game in a few different areas. It's interesting. It elevated my game in jits, which is jiu-jitsu, which is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It elevated my game in my martial arts as far as my boxing and my kickboxing. And it elevated my game for life as far as how I handle and make adjustments outside the streets. And how did it help me? By breaking things down and analyzing the different dimensions and the layers and the different lines of where things go. When it comes to the police department, let's just move to the vice piece. When I got asked about the vice piece, or about the police piece, initially it wasn't about joining. It was about training the officers.
Huh.
An associate of mine who I know, he contacted me and said, listen, man, he's also an activist. And he put in work here in the city. I'm not gonna say any names because he prefers me. He asked me not to with certain things, but because he's doing some business. But the brother asked me. He said, "Listen, I've been asked to do this initiative where it's called Be the Change and to get more African American in the community to become police officers. You know, male and female, get them to join. The issue is that." They have a problem with two parts of the test, the physical, which is the power test, and the psychological. He was like, listen, he said, but it seems like the physical part is the most demanded for people in our community. I said, all right. He said, and the city was going to go to some of these trainers at LA Fitness and Bally's, you know, not Bally's, but LA Fitness and what's this place called? Planet Fitness and all these different gyms and Export. And he suggested, no. He said, support some of these local dojos. He was like, support some of these local dojos. He said, that'll give a connection to the city and to the community. He's helping mm-hmm. small businesses. And they have a component that the officers don't get, you know. And so they was like, okay, cool.
Genius so idea, man. That was a great fucking idea.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, bet. So he said, I was like, what would you like me to do? He said, get them ready for the power test and give them that self-regulating component that you talk about. For example, in my class, in order for you to get rank, you have to know theory and things like that, which is what I had to know. And so, like my students will tell you, if you ask them, how many times should you think before you act? They'll say five times. How many breaths should you take when you're breathing? How many breaths? They'll say you should take seven breaths in between each thought. You know, they'll break that down. Take one breath before, take a deep breath after the initial thought, start thinking it out. Breathe, focus on your breathing. And then after you take your last breath, then go speak your words after you've gotten everything out and analyzed everything. And so we talk about that self-regulating component, visualization, meditation. It has to be done at the end of every class. It's a must. Because if you know as well as I do, sometimes you have a good day on the mat. You might go outside the door like, man, you know, full of energy. Like, yo, you know, and it may take the wrong dude to look at you crazy and say something to you. You mess around and bust him up, man. But if you have to bring yourself back down out of your Super Saiyan mode and chill for a second, you know, I'm about to go home and chill out, you know? So that's what that meditation comes in, you know? And so,
I love this shit, man. What you already said your dojo name, right? You already put all this out there.
Oh, my dojo is Quantum Martial Arts. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to put that, but since I'm putting that same as plug.
Damn right. Put that shit out there.
Quantum Martial Arts. We really just started. We've been only open for like 2 months. Though I've been doing programs throughout the city.
Yeah, what's the activism stuff you're focused on?
Oh, okay. Well, let me just say this. I've been doing programs out the city with the martial arts for the past almost 10 years now. So actually it's been in, probably 10 years plus. Damn. Okay, so I started off with a program. I started off teaching free martial arts programs. I would go to some schools and just help out. They would say, hey, can you help teach here? And I was like, yeah, you do karate. Can you teach some kids? And actually, I started teaching for my instructor back in 97. But when I went on my own, it was like, what? Like officially was 2011, when it was like, hey, this is when I created Quantum. Before that, it was just me, Mark Quinn, teaching karate to some kids. And then I got involved with a program called BAM, which is an acronym for Becoming a Man. And they're in several high schools and elementary schools around the city. And as a matter of fact, Barack Obama was really pushing the BAM initiative like a few years ago, like, man, mentoring and all this. And then Rahm Emanuel somehow made it his baby, who's the mayor here, mayor of Chicago. And he put so much money behind it. And BAM, it was a great program. I seen, man, BAM changed lives. Like, I'm talking about dudes who got felonies, you know, for aggravated assault, battery, holding gun cases. You know, they in high school, they got the bands wrapped around their legs, they on house arrest. I'm talking about going from DNF students to BC and damn near AB students. Like, wow. Man, BAM was incredible, man. And what happened was, every session, BAM would recycle their coaches, except for one, which was me. They kept me on for 5 years.
Why'd they recycle? What was the thought behind that?
I think that they just felt that nobody could understand what they were really wanted. And I think they was really desperately looking for people who could really connect to the youth, you know, better. And the problem is, excuse me, I had my sinuses. I think what it is that a lot of the guys that they were getting were older. I'm younger. I'm still connected to the street, so I can speak that language and I know what's going on.
Yeah.
And even though I'm older, I look younger. My students just, what was this? What's today? Today's Monday, Thursday. My students was like, yo, coach, you 38? Man, we thought you was like 39 or something, man. I was like, nah, dude, I'm 38. Because they think I look young. Like, so, and because I keep up with them, I can tell them what artists they listening to. I can have that talk. They love it. And I don't treat them like they ain't no babies, man. They're not babies, man. It's a reason why they're in the condition that they're in. It's a reason why they have the mindset they have. But if you don't know the reason and you ain't asking the questions, don't assume. Just be quiet and sit down and pick up a book and read and study something. You know, they are beautiful kids, man. Like, I go to a community meet every week. You know, forgive me if I'm all over the place. Just try to keep up with me, guys.
You're on the Cognitive Rampage, brother. Go for it, and you're on one right now. Go right up.
I'm at a community meeting every week, local organizing committee. It's about how to better the black community and how to better not just the black community, but how can we better the city? Because there is an issue. You know, everybody ain't nobody dumb. Everybody in the world knows what has happened to black people in America. Okay, and the whole slavery piece, the whole, you know, Jim Crow, apartheid. Everybody knows everything about that. Civil rights, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, boom, 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 boom. Everybody, if you don't know, Google it, research it, read about something. So it's nothing new about what's going on in our community. So we sit down and we talk about what can we do to benefit our community. And I'm listening to the elders talk about these kids. Like, yo, man, they have no morality. Because we are in Chicago. You hear the news. Yo, it's the murder capital of the world. There's some 38 murders so far here. And this, that, and the third this year alone. And Donald Trump wants to send in the feds. So what happened is that I'm listening to the elders talk about them. They have no morality. Just do away with them. You can't make connections with them. You know, we need to start doing something else, whatever. You know,
just jaded and giving up.
Right. Just don't. And here's the thing. The issue they had with me was I told them, I said, you know, with all due respect, y'all are my elders. Like, I love my elders, man. I don't give a damn. If you're an elder, you're an elder. And I respect you. I don't care what it is, black, white, Asian, Indian, you know, whatever, Hispanic, I don't care who you are. If you're an elder, you was on this planet before me. You time traveled here before me, so you can talk to me and teach me something. But, and I'm going to listen. I'm a yes, sir, you, and a yes, ma'am, you all day long until you're wrong. Because truth outweighs all that. Truth outweighs age, baby. It just does. And so I had to tell my elders, I said, listen, I said, with all due respect, y'all don't qualify to talk about the youth. And it was like, excuse me? It's like, you don't qualify. You don't make this connection. Do you talk to them in the street? If I say a phrase right now, well, you know what it means?
Mm.
Which is their language? If I name a couple of artists that they listen to, that they love right now, that's local artists on their block, that they bang and bump like he's Jay-Z or something, would you know who he is? Would you know his background? Do you know anything about the gangs here? Except for that, which you experienced. Do you know what's going on right now? No? Then you don't qualify to talk about it. Phew. You don't qualify to talk about it. All they can do is just look and just be like, man. And then you talk about white supremacy. You're talking about leaving the youth alone and separating from them. That's nothing but a white supremacist mindset.
Ooh, shit.
The Willie Lynch letter would say, separate the elders from the youth.
Yep.
And now you're talking about leave them alone and get away from them. When the fact of the matter is, the reason why we are in this condition right now is because of your failure. So don't, or your lack of, we got, hey, civil rights, you felt, some people feel like it was a success, and so you got lazy. Instead of teaching us, hey, this is what needs to be. Granted, there was other components added to it, but we're the babies. You're the adult. My daughter, I have a one-year-old. Listen to me. You have a 13, 14-year-old, because they're the ones that's doing the shootings, believe it or not, anywhere between the ages of 13 to about 25. They all babies. Remember, they say in psychology, the human brain isn't fully developed until about the age of 25, 26, right? So,
yeah.
So you're still dealing with babies.
Mm-hmm.
And if I let my one-year-old get loose right now in the house without telling her no or giving her the guidance and the lessons, What you think she gonna do to this house?
Or herself.
Or herself. She finna tear this place up.
She gonna, so what happens, she gonna, the, God.
What happens when the parents neglect the kid? The kid go wild. Because the kid is trying to figure it out for themselves. They're trying to discover themselves. A lot of this is the our elders' fault. And I know they may have a problem. Some people may have a problem with me saying this, but it's the truth. It's
well,
the truth.
I say it. See the child, see the parent.
Yes. So, you know, so what happened was this, that my activist work led me into wanting to give that back. Give back to my community. It's been given to me. I got to give it back to them. I started with BAM. I really started before BAM, but BAM is what really took me off. And I was like, man, I'm meeting different political people and learning about this game. And then I started going to many different meetings and circles, sitting down. And that's when I started protesting and, you know, just decided to really get involved. I can't just be a complainer. I can't be one of those people that's like, hey, you know, what is it? Hey, somebody should be doing this, that, and the third. Nah. I should be doing this.
You're out there.
You know what I'm saying? You gotta put in work. You know what I'm saying? You can't sit there and just say who should be doing what. No, you should be doing this. Mm. You know, and so you should be putting in that work. So
man, you're gonna fire me up, man. You're gonna launch me into something, man. I'm trying to walk every morning. But anyway, when I'm talking this morning, I was out walking and I started thinking about, you know, parents that say that, you know, they're taking care of their kid, they're protecting them or whatever, you know, but they're really not changing the world. They're not doing anything to make the world or the community better. They're doing a lot to make their home better. You know what I mean? And they're buying stuff or doing this or that or providing for their kid. But I still think that kid's still going to grow up into this world that we haven't changed, that we're not doing anything about. But yet we go home and just say, thank God I'm doing it for my kids. You know, yep. And I'm glad they are. I don't want to take it away. So the parents doing that right, that's good. But maybe we do more than your kids learn. You can do more than just for your kids. You know what I mean?
Look, man, the issue that I have with people, period, is that they are complainers and they are more so watchers than doers. And they also don't recognize their power. Mm. I'm gonna tap on something real quick, and I'm gonna get back to the story. What's going on in the world at this very moment is incredible. People all over the world are chanting resist, and they see something that they totally, totally are against, and they're like, "Yo, Donald Trump," and I can't handle it. You know, they're just going through this whole piece,
yeah,
and so. The issue that I have is that I have a problem with marching. Everything has its place. Everything has its place. But what I do have a problem with is those individuals who talk that madness and don't really want to put no action forth. The people I really respect, I respect the marchers. But the ones I really respect, I see that I'm losing power here. For some reason, my charge is not charging. But anyway, I'll fix it in a second. The ones I really respect, I respect them all, the protesters, the marchers. But, man, I got a certain love in my heart for those individuals who actually, they don't talk it, they walk it. Like, if you ever heard of the Weather Underground, them people, you know, they were going around trying, like, blowing up Fed buildings. And I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they and these weren't black folks, these white folks. You know, it was like, yo.
Well, of course, man. It was a bomb. Of course, it's white people.
they was against the system. And one of them was my wife's college professor. And so, you know, it was a college professor. She was, you know, my fiance, rather. She. So, you know, these people put in work. And I'm not saying you should go out there and do it. I don't want nobody miss screw my words up. What I'm saying is put in work. Mm-hmm. If you got a problem, look, go to. Run for alderman. Run for mayor. Dude, look, man, you got an issue. You really think that these people hold power? You giving them your power? You got a thousand people marching downtown and a few hundred police officers can hold y'all back? Nah. It's going to be real simple, Jack. Either y'all going to start doing what is right or we gonna shut this whole thing down. How about this? How about we all take off work tomorrow? How about 70% of the nation take off work tomorrow? What do you think gonna happen to the country? Don't play with us.
You're gonna lose a lot of money.
Don't play with us, man. Yo, yo. This is the time.
But brother, they keep us all divided, man. They drop so many different fights in that everybody feels close about. Nobody sees it. So as long as we're fighting black and white, as long as we're fighting about rebel flags, as long as we're fighting about little small things and we keep beating each other's asses, we're paying no attention as they just steal that shit.
Yeah, yeah. So so now this is where I'm going to turn it into the whole cop piece. So check it out.
All right. Well, I wanted to drop something. You were talking about how people do things and don't do things. And then you can look this video up, actually, man. It's on in 1968, during the Civil Rights March. There's, God, the gentleman's name. I just couldn't imagine. To make his point, walks up on video, hands his baby to his mother, and lights his fucking self on fire.
Yeah, I know you're talking about.
All right, millennial, go for it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how motherfuckers, the Black Panther parties were taking over colleges. I mean, motherfuckers don't get it. It wasn't just fire hoses and signs, man. Shit was dark.
No, it was, but see, it had to be that way. But here's the thing, though. People focus on the negative without seeing the positive. When it came to the Panther Party, they got these lies out here about, oh, they were a terrorist group.
I'd have been with them. Nobody. I'm just saying, I'd have been taking over. I've been taking over colleges with them.
They weren't bombing, but they were going to college. Students were tired of the BS. You know, people were tired of the bullshit, man. And the fact is that you forget they were feeding their community free food programs. They weren't asking for no money. They weren't stealing from nobody. Yep. They were just like, yo, look, we're tired of getting our ass beat by the police.
Yeah, my point was pointing out that nobody's really doing it like that.
Exactly. Nobody, and that's my point. Stop complaining. Look, I made this complaint, and I said this on another radio show, and I'll say it again. I'm gonna say it again and again and again. I came at some of my own friends. I was like a young lady, a friend of mine. She just passed of brain cancer not too long ago. Her daughter, she was a baby. She's had to be 15, 16 at the time. She's going to a school. And the Woodline commute area in Chicago, if anybody's familiar with Woodline. And there was a guy out there under the viaduct that she had to go under that snuck out on her and stabbed her. So she's in the University of Chicago Children's Hospital. And so we get word. I rush over to the hospital. I'm like, what do he look like? What does he look like? What is he wearing? This and that. And I come to find out the police were out searching for him too. And I ran into the officer that actually interviewed her. And he was like, what are you doing? I said, I'm finna find him. And I'm gonna bring him to you. I said, don't worry. We're not going to do nothing bogus. We're going to find him. We're going to bring him to you. And he was like, well, look, man, just let the police handle it. He's saying what he's supposed to say.
Right.
He's kind of looking like, okay. You know. So I put the call out on Facebook. I know Facebook is public, man. I don't care, man. I put the call out. I said, listen, man, there's a dude going around stabbing our babies and being uncomfortable for our women to do what they supposed to be doing and walking in the streets. I'm about to go out here to Woodline and patrol this area and catch this dude who with me. I might have had one dude respond out of all the men. There was another incident where we had a guy raping girls over on in Chatham, 75th by St. between St. Lawrence and King Drive. My boy opened up a restaurant right there on 75th and St. Lawrence. And another one of my guys was helping to run it. He was a chef. He was like, what you finna do, Q? I said, I'm finna just go drive through the alleys a little bit, maybe park and go walk through the alleys and see if somebody want to jump out on me. And he was like, what? Dude, anybody will tell you and they'll vouch for me. I want to protect my community. I want to protect our women and our children, our elders, our babies, as well as my family and ourselves. Look, I don't care who you are. I don't care what you are. If I see that wrong is wrong, I'm supposed to step up. I can't live my life like a damn coward, man. I cannot look my daughter in the face or my wife in the face and be like, well, you know, I saw him there. I seen a video. It was a video, man, where this guy, they're on the train, and he snatches the guy's, it appears to be his girlfriend's phone out of hand. And the dude looked at him like, the hell? And the guy was like, what you want to do about it? I just can't be the dude that just cowers up.
Nope.
I just can't be. It's like, dude, well, yo, you not.
Bro, Oh, sorry, man. You hyping me up, man. You get me nuts. I did a rampage on this shit, man. It's like if more men were walking around going, fuck with that little kid, fuck with that little baby, and I'm going to fuck you up, man. I watched that Target thing where that fucking dude punched that old lady, and motherfuckers just stood there.
Yeah, dude. Look, let me explain something to you, bro. And I'm gonna start making connections. This is where chess, like I told you all before, where chess helped me to break things down in layers.
Yeah.
Chess helped me realize a lot of different things. Racism definitely exists in this country. And I'm going somewhere with this, and I hope everybody can keep up with me. Racism definitely exists in this country. Let's just be real. Let's stop doing the whole elephant in the room thing. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, babe. I'm in. Let's ride.
My mother was alive in civil rights. She was alive during the civil rights movement. I'm one generation out of civil rights. Now, people like to focus on years. Man, it's been 50 years since then. Why can't people get over it? You focused on years and numbers. I'm focused on generations. That means the young boy or young girl that may have been calling my mother a nigga has a child that's my age, possibly.
And they teach it from within the home.
Bro. And then I have two daughters. So that mindset gets passed down. Now, some people be like, yo, that's wrong. But you got a lot. Dude, Trump brought it out. Cats start coming out the woodwork. Yeah, right around the corner from my boy's house. He lives in a predominantly black area. There's swastikas down on one of his neighbor's garage Friday. We drove by. He treated me to lunch afterwards. He's actually one of my students, and he treated me to lunch. He was like, hey, can you give me a ride, Sensei? I said, yeah, give me a ride. So I gave him a ride. And his wife sent him a text, and there was swastikas. He lives in an area called Beverly. Swastikas and everything all into that. Now, what's funny about Beverly, coincidentally, when we first moved over to Beverly, my mother just came in. When did we move over to Beverly? What year was that? Like what? Was it early 2000 or 90, or in the 90s?
2000.
Like early 2000? Yeah. So early 2000s. I got chased by skinheads twice. So because you're not right around, right next door, what's across Western is predominantly a white neighborhood. Plus, Beverly at one point was all predominantly white. But then blacks started, you know, migrating into Beverly. And really, you know, and if you don't know what Beverly is considered Beverly Hills of Chicago. Okay. So it's a beautiful area, affordable. It's affordable living. But then when you get to the homes, so in apartments, it's affordable living. But the homes are beautiful, big mansions and whatnot. So, man, I got chased twice by skinheads. So, and the thing is, though, I still never had hatred. I mean, I take that back. I was beginning to have hatred. Martial arts and chess really brought me out. And what happened was that it helped me break things down in layers. Here's what I mean by that. Yes, racism exists. But I see things generationally. I don't see things in numbers. And I also understand what's going on out here in the system, like we talked about before, the media. The media portrays everybody a particular way, and it affects you psychologically. The music you hear, the movies you watch, the TV shows, the radio shows, magazines, the newspapers, the news clippings and articles and clips, everything plays a part on you psychologically. I do a thing with my students, because then my students would be like, how come, man, 12, they call the police 12. Man, 12 be out here tripping. Man, why they just think we some niggas or whatever, and these white folks move on. And I'm like, well, ain't always the white folks. They'd be like, yeah, the black ones are worse. And so then I'm like, okay. I feel y'all. Y'all don't like the police. Y'all hate the police. But let's think about things in a different way. So I said, I bet you all will do the same thing the police do to y'all. If I said, we don't do that. We don't do that. I said, yes, y'all do. So I had to show it to them. So I said, I'm going to give y'all an example. And I'll do it right now on the air with you and people, whoever's listening. I give them an example. I tell them, we're going to act like we watch a TV and the news comes on. And I say, a 6'2" African-American male stands about 200 pounds wearing a fresh tailored suit or fine tailored suit and a fresh haircut, driving in a 2017 black Mercedes-Benz four-door, has just been reported to shooting four people in the park and robbing a convenience store. Now, that's today, which is Monday. Tuesday, we see on the news, A black male, Suzanne's about 6'2", 200 pounds, fine tailored suit, fresh haircut, black Mercedes-Benz, four-door, 2017, has now been reported of shooting some people in, on their front porch and robbing them. Then we hear about it, let's say, Thursday. Black male, 6'2", 200 pounds, wearing a fine tailored suit, fresh haircut, black Mercedes-Benz, driving a black Mercedes-Benz, 2017, four-door, has now been shown beating an elderly person and taking her phone from her on the block of 79th in Aberdeen.
Okay.
And then I asked my students, we're outside getting ready to wait for the school bus to take us on a field trip. And we notice a black four-door 2017 Mercedes-Benz pull up, and a guy gets out wearing a fine tailored suit with a fresh haircut, standing about 6'2", might be about 200 pounds. And he looks like he's going into a suit jacket or something. What's your first initial thoughts?
Of course. Yeah, you're right there.
Oh, I said, so what do you think happens to y'all when a police officer, black male, let's say black, let's not make them white, let's say black, a black police officer hears on the news, sees the TV show Cops, sees all these different movies and shows, probably got picked on when he was a shorty, when he was a kid, been hearing all this stuff. Actually, in the academy, off of the officers that I've trained, even said that they'll show different pictures of guys and what different people look like. And when they see you on the block, just walking down the street, you might be coming from the community college, literally, just going home. They pull you over and got an automatic attitude. What do you think happened? What do you think is that? They'd be like, damn. I'm like, right. You just profiled the dude in the suit. And I put him in a suit on purpose. Because generally, when you think of a guy in a suit, you think of somebody that's in charge, somebody that got money, somebody that's doing good.
When you started talking, I was like, real estate mogul.
Right. You know what I mean? You start thinking something like that. Then they sit there, they're like, yo, they just tripping. Like, that's crazy. I'm like, yeah. I said, so now let's do this. That's one layer. I work at a nightclub every weekend. And at the time, I was working at the nightclub, too. It's made a little over a year now for me. And I told him, I said, listen, every weekend for the past 6 months, I work Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Just, you all know me. I'm yes, sir, no, sir. Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. I walk up to a gentleman because there's no hats allowed in the club. Now they can wear them. But at the time, you couldn't wear a baseball cap. And I say, excuse me, sir, can you please remove your hat? And I would get, man, fuck out my face. Bitch ass nigga. This, that, and the third. Every weekend. I said, after 6 months, and I've literally had to tussle with some of these guys. I said, you know what, sir? You need to leave. You have to leave. We can't have that here. You don't want to remove your hat. And then they want to literally put their hands on me, and then I got to tussle with these guys, throw them out. I've been to fisticuffs with a couple of them. After 6 months of that, and I see a dude walk in with his baseball cap. How do you
fuck him? Fuck him.
Exactly. Now, the martial law, now, because of the arts, like I told you, I can self-regulate. But I still, I got to check myself because I'm automatically in defense mode. So I got to be like, all right, Q, chill out. I got to live my culture. Chill out. Breathe. Excuse me, sir. And sure enough, the minute he want a man, bitch, get the fuck, man, Nick, man, you ain't shit. Whoa. And I swear it happens like that. I wish I could take a camera. You would.
No, bro, I was in nightclubs for about 10 years of my life, man. I managed them. I did them all, man. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Like, yo, this is crazy. And let me describe myself. I'm 6'2", 205 pounds.
Black Mercedes, 2007.
I knew you was going to go there. I'm not that big. The other bouncers are anywhere between 6'2 to 6'5, and they're like 300 pounds, man. They muscle, dude. They're just
huge. I'll take that before I take the small dude. Small dude been fighting his whole life. Big man ain't been in but two fights.
I swear that's the truth. And so, but I get picked on the most. Even last night, dudes. Now, I wear a suit. I wear a suit every week.
And probably the most dangerous one to be fucking with.
My boss says the same thing, and he's been doing it for over 20 years. He was like, yo.
That's not using logic. You're going white. Why is everyone 6'5", but he's not?
Yes. Right. Everybody's like them at 6'5", bro. And so what we learned is that the suit that I wear, people don't think that I'm security. They think I'm management. So they figure they can talk to me any old kind of way, but they also think that I'm the boss, so I make the decisions. I'm not the boss. I just wear a suit because I was always taught, you know, dress accordingly. My mother was the customer service her whole life. So it was like, hey, you wear a suit, you know, you want to represent yourself well. My father was very, very big on that. You know, always have your hair brushed, always go outside with your teeth polished, always make sure you got your clothes ironed, you know, always make sure you, I'm on the radio show, I'm sorry. Always make sure you got your clothes ironed, all those different things. Just wanted to make sure that you're just on point. So when I'm at the club, the other bouncers make fun of me because they wear sweatshirts and cargo pants.
They're coming to fight.
Right. Actually, they're great people, bro. They don't play no games.
When you're that big, though, it's hard to get a suit to fit right, man. You know what I mean? I don't blame him, man. You 6'5". I got to tussle with a dude. My $100 suit, that bitch is ripping. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, oh, man, well, my suit just came off the rack, so you know what. So what happens is that I always get made fun of, but that's the way it's supposed to go. And I had, but anyway, going back to my students, I had to let them know, like, yo, it changes my mind. And I have to realize that I don't know this dude's story. Why they got attitudes like this? Because they associate me with authority, like the police.
Right, right.
They associate me with that. So now that I know that, what do I do with it? Now things get real. You know what I mean? I have to now approach things in a different way. I have to now think of things differently. I can't approach them and be super defensive. I understand the situation, so I go to him with a smile now. Yo, what up, big bro? What's going on? Before it was a straight face, like, yo, excuse me, sir. Can you mind taking off your hat? But they didn't like the fact that my eyebrows are down like this. And all. Even though I'm speaking polite, they're not listening to the tone of my voice. They're looking at my face and they see that I'm a, you know, he's someone of authority, and they probably had bad experiences with them. So I go to him now. Hey, what's up, big bro? Hey, how you feel? You know, I'm a little bit lighter. Hey, listen, man, you mind taking off your hat for me? Or it's something about whispering in a man's ear that bothers him. I just go to his ear and be like, hey, big bro, listen, you mind? I need you to remove your hat. They just be like, hey, my fault, bro.
Right.
I'm telling you. Now, I still get an attitude here and there, but it's the adjustment. Mm-hmm. I teach my students, a martial artist is one who makes adjustments. So it's the adjustment that had to be made. They was just like, yo. I'm like, yeah. So y'all profile yourselves.
Shit, man. And you're deep in the psyche too, man, because what you're talking about is linked all the way back to the beginning of the creation of ours as a species. We had to discern from an environment so quickly and make assumptions for survival. I mean, I was either eaten, it was going to kill me, I was going to fall. So we're the only that we know of really so much that sees patterns better than anybody, but also makes them up. We invent patterns that aren't even fucking there.
Yes. Listen, let me just connect it to the police part real quick. It must be meant for me to talk to you today because I just got a text saying that I don't have to teach class today. I teach class at a high school called Finger High School. If anybody's familiar with Finger, Finger's actually famous because a young kid by the name of Darian Albert. I won't say it was Darian. Darian Albert. He got killed. He got hit over the head with a 2x4 here in Chicago because there was a mass brawl going on. And that's the school that I teach a karate class at for some of the high school students. I teach boxing. It's actually a boxing class for 1 hour, and then it's MMA for the next. So I just got that text. I'm like, cool. I get to talk to the brothers a little bit longer. So anyway, what happens is that let's bring it to the vice piece and the police piece. The thing was your cue, the type of brother you are, the type of man you are, the work you do in the community. And I'll give another quick background. I don't know if you're familiar, but it's a women's group here called MASK, Mothers Against Senseless Killings. Yeah. They sit and they get in between the guns and the gangs and the violence here in Chicago, and they caused a hell of an impact for the past 2 years in Inglewood, one of the most violent parts of Chicago, of Inglewood. And I ended up becoming the president of Men Against Senseless Killings. And MASK was created by a woman by the name of Tamar Manasseh. If you Google it, you can check it out. And I initially started doing that to provide security. Everything that I've done was either about teaching, mentoring, and teaching like a little karate or boxing program to make connections with the youth and give them an outlet and to give back to the community or to provide security. Like we did the protest. I don't know if you're familiar with the MAGMAL piece that 2 years ago, they about 2,000 people hit downtown the Magnificent Mile on Black Friday, stopped the shopping. And I was a part of that. I helped, I didn't, I ain't gonna say I helped organize it. But I was a part of the organizing as far as the security component and making sure that the elders didn't get hurt. The whole purpose was making sure the women and the children were able to be out there and that the elders didn't get hurt. The men were cool, but my whole goal was, yo, none of the elders should be touched, and we should have escape routes for the elders if anything goes crazy. We just had, point men. I just wanted to make sure that those people who wanted to go out there and protest their rights and have their right to protest, that was elderly, did not get harmed in any way, no shape, form, or fashion. And so that was my purpose of being out there. And so I've been doing this for a minute. So what happened was it was approached to me. We've been watching you, and you do great work. You are good for the community. You'll be a great cop. Yeah, nah, I'm not on that.
I usually use my tombstone line from Doc Holliday there, where it goes, my hypocrisy only goes so far.
Not on that.
Yeah.
It was like, no, you would be the perfect cop. And then I started thinking about it, like, okay. And this happened 2 weeks after I got pulled over for a busted headlight. And I had to go Facebook Live because the cop was giving me the roughest time. Because I was just got back from teaching a class at the dojo, at my friend's dojo. And I'm coming home. I had to go to Walgreens. Which is down the street from my house, literally, but what, 4 blocks. And I get, your headlight's out. And I'm like, yeah, why the fuck you driving around with a busted headlight? I want to say, why the fuck are you talking to me like this? But I'm like, well, sir, I was like, actually, I'm just, my wife got into an accident. I didn't call, she's my fiance, but I call her my wife. My wife, she ended up getting into an accident recently. And he's like, I don't give a fuck about that. You're not supposed to be driving around with a busted headlight. So you asking me if I want to be a cop after I'm dealing with this shit. So
I'm like, no. I'm like, I'm going to be fighting everybody on the force.
Dude, I'm like, this is crazy. But at the same time, not every cop is bad. Remember.
Right.
Everything else that we just talked about and put it to now the police officers. So now I have to see things like that. So this is what I did. I said, I'll think about it. And then my boy hit me and said, yo, Vice is coming to town. I told him about you and how you applied. And I said, I didn't apply. And he was like, well, just make up something. I was like, I told my wife, I said, yo, I'm not applying. I'm not lying about shit. He was like, hey, man, just talk to him about it. I was like, So I told Vice straight up at first. I was like, listen, I didn't apply to be a cop. And he was like, well, this series is about those who apply to be a police officer, who are black and why they decided to be, black men and women applied to be. They said, but just out of curiosity, why didn't you apply? I said, I'm conflicted. They were, why are you conflicted? And I told them why. They was like, yo.
Better story. Way like, better story.
You need to hear this part. Because like you said, who's thinking like this?
Right. And I saw it and I was like, it seems so logical. I'm like, yeah, bring the youngins in, let them change the system. Like you think in generations. So bring in the younger generations and then we change it. But my thought was, or does it just condemn them?
So here's the thing. The pros and cons for being a cop for me. The pros is that I do get to get in other doors because of the badge. I get to get in many different doors. I get to sit down in other meetings, many different meetings, and talk to different people. I do get to protect the community, sure. But here's the issue. With what's going on out here right now with the Trump piece, and in Chicago, it feels like people in Chicago are scared right now. They really
are.
Can
you feel it? Is like the energy around?
Chicago is nervous. I know worldwide people are nervous and uncomfortable.
Right.
Chicago really is because he mentioned Chicago. And when the president misses your city and talks about feds and
assistance. Well, you're talking about sending in the National Guard.
National Guard and all that, right. So when people start hearing that, they get real antsy. So let's say he does that and I do get on the force. Now I'm used as an instrument. I can be used as an instrument of oppression. Mm. And though they're saying I'm doing my job, I don't feel comfortable standing in front of these protesters, Provino, and arguing with these people or trying to put some shield and looking like a force against them because I'm not against them. I'm not. As a matter of fact, I should be standing with them.
So should the cops. The cops just need to turn around and hold the shield the other way and say, bring that shit on. Now who you sending?
So my thing is that I can't. I'm like, yo, man, I'm conflicted. I can't. I think it's an honor to be, first of all, to be a police officer. In my mind is to be a warrior for the community. It's supposed to be about honor, respect, protection, serving. It's supposed to be about changing lives. It's supposed to be about literally stopping those villains who really do want to make it bad for your people or for the block or for the city and cleaning up the streets. But man,
not tint and broken headlights.
That man, you and I both know.
But those traffic tickets is how they make all that dough to build the new wing. And they buy all the new machine guns and the new mace and the new shit with all the tickets.
So you're going through this, you're dealing with this, man, inside your mind. And you're like, yo, do I want to really be seen as that? Because now my community that I has so much love for me, the minute they saw the Vice episode, I was getting texts with pig emojis. And my boys were sitting me in Facebook inboxes talking about, so now you 12 and you the popo and blah, 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 and all this and the third. Now, I got more love. Believe it or not, I got more love than hate. But the hate that I got was real. I was like, and from unexpected people, I was like, yo, this is crazy. Because their experience is, yo, evil. They connect being the police is evil. So I'm like, yo, man, I could be a good cop. I can. But, you know, one of the reasons why I applied on the show, if you saw the show, you'll see that I applied. The reason why they don't show this, but if you go to HBO Now or HBO Go, they have some deleted scenes. There's an elder there. Her name is Mama Carol. We call her Mama. Carol Adams. Carol Adams is an activist here in the city and has done some great works. And that conversation with Carol Adams was, listen, apply, get your foot in the door. Because after January 31st, if you decide that you want to be a cop, you can't be one now. She said, so what you're going to do is apply. Get your foot in the door and make your decision after that. Weigh it out. Make your decision when they call you, if they call you. Then if you say nah, then tell them, you know, I've changed my mind. But if you say, yeah, at least you know that you're in there. And she said, also, you can be the type of cop like Baba David. Baba David is a gentleman, in African culture, you call elders mama and baba. Baba for father, mama for mother, of course. Any elder that's a male or female is your mother and father. So Baba David, he was a Black Panther and a cop. And his partner was, as they live, from what I understand, and this has been consistent, his partner adopted well over 50 youth, like legally adopted.
Damn.
I'm talking about hood, the dudes that you're talking about, the shooters, the guys that you're saying are selling drugs. He adopted them and gave them the love and tried to be the best example of a police officer and a Black man and a man as he possibly could be. And David did the same thing. Sorry about that. That was actually my wife calling me. David will pull up in his car and boom. Nah, stop that. Yo, let me get him. And then he'll take him. Man, it was about nothing. Sorry about that. It was about nothing. He would literally help and reach out and touch that youth. Mm. And they had nothing but the utmost love and respect for this man. And to this day, and he's a hell of an activist. And so he even talked to me once about his confliction. So that don't, all because I become a cop don't mean I can't put in no good work.
Mm.
But I know what struggles I've seen, even him talking to me and even my uncles and different people go through, even some of my students, it changes you. And my fear is that I'm going to be used as an instrument of oppression. And so I don't want to be that. I just don't. And so, and I've made up my mind. I'm not going through it. I have made up my mind. I haven't told anybody publicly. This will be my first time saying it publicly. I have made up my mind. I have decided not to. I think, especially what's going on with the Trump piece, I'm not going to be used as that instrument. And I know me. I'm going to lose my job, which is going to affect my family. I'm not going to be that. I'm going to end up being like, you know what? Screw you. I'm not doing that, what you're telling me to do. Let me go stand on this front line with these people and make sure they don't get harmed. I'm going to provide security for them to make sure they don't get hurt. You know, so, you know, I've seen agent provocateurs while the protests are going on I know for a fact that you put plainclothes officers in there with picket signs. That to me is instigating shit. I've seen a woman who I know is an officer dress up like a protester and kick off a fight. And this was last year. So I'm like, yo, they're using you for this? So they actually think they're doing good police work. Here's the problem. Here's the issue. They think they're doing good police work. They don't see themselves as the villain. So I don't want to be that dude. I can't, man. I can't. And so, I after seeing what I've been seeing recently, I just can't do it. I'm not saying I hate the police. I have mad love for those officers that are actually doing their job. It's actually out here doing real work.
I personally think that I don't think anybody can be a cop, man. I mean, to really do it, I mean, we talk about all the human experience here, what we perceive, how we try to live. I mean, it's one of the hardest jobs on the fucking planet. And I could get killed. I could do. So it's so hard not to be jaded and your normal human reactions just happen. It's like we got to come up with something fucking else, man.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, my thing is that at one point, I really was considering it, man. I really was. But now I'm like, you know what? I'm good. After seeing what I've been seeing for the past week, Trump's been in office for 9 days, 10 days. Man, ain't no way. I'm sorry. I know how I'm going to be used and I can't do it. Yeah. I would serve my community better by helping them come up with good solutions to their issues, helping and putting in some good work, putting in that footwork, putting my hands in the muck and mire and molding something that would be beneficial for not only my people, but for the my community and my city. I just see it that way, man. I'll be able to do better work without being confined and shackled to a system that is going to point me in a direction and use me in the wrong ways and say that it's good police work. You're not going to do that. Now, let me just say this. I am not saying that the police are evil, but there are evil police. And we ain't stupid. We know this. There are individuals out there who take that badge and they abuse their powers. There are individuals out there who take that badge and actually think that they're doing good work and they're not doing good work. And then you have individuals out there who are really putting in great work. I commend those individuals. Those individuals who are putting in that good work, yo, man, much power to you. I salute you. I respect you. And hell, I'd even help you do whatever it is that needs to get done in order to better this city, this community, this world, whatever. But for those of you who are out here, then you know in your heart of hearts that you're abusing that authority. And you know you using yourself as an instrument of destruction and oppression. Man, you should be freaking ashamed of your damn self, man. You should be. And it's as simple as that, man. I'm not finna be that guy. I'm not finna be that guy that's gonna end up hating my own people for what?
Well, you bring up a lot of things. The reason that crossed me over is I understand the epigenetic influence, that environmental influence. And I'm not sure if it's nature or nurture more, but we're learning more and more that the environment matters more than the genetics. And to then walk into an environment that possibly could be structured that way. We already know it's a good old boy system. It was hard enough for the women to get in already. And so now they got to walk around in the military and in cops as women kind of going, am I equal? They're kind of getting there, but who knows when you walk in that epigenetic influence, what happens on the other side?
Yeah, true. Very true.
For you know it, you're coming out and everyone that you see in the black suit and a Mercedes, you're going, that's trouble.
That's what I'm saying, man. And I don't want to be that guy. I've been caught up like that.
Or maybe you're just about the only strongest motherfucker around that's willing to walk into that epigenetic influence. And maybe your vibration is big enough to fucking put a landmine in that epigenetic influence.
And you know what? I was told that a few times. I'm going to be real. I don't know, but I do know.
What do they say? The ones that should be in power are the ones that don't think they should be?
I've heard that. I've heard that. What my boy do? What did he say yesterday? He said, you like Neo, man. I was like, Neo? Like, yeah, Neo from the Matrix. He said, he didn't believe he was the one until he just had to walk them down. He just had to walk it. And then all of a sudden he realized, like, oh, shit.
Yeah, shit.
Look, man, ain't nothing. Look, man, I'm gonna say this right here. I'm gonna be real. I don't ever believe anything special about me, except for me, really deciding to slow my ass down, think. Slow my ass down and think. Learn some shit. Study some shit. Don't be so goddamn emotional. Logic over emotion. Let me tell you a conversation I had with a friend of mine. We talking about the whole racial piece. We talking about the police department piece, and then it was the whole racial piece. He was like, yo, he said, Q, he was like, you know, we super cool. And these two white boys. Yo, we cool. And but you know, man, you hang around some interesting dudes, man, and you know, I don't think you would make it as a cop because a lot of your friends are Nation of Islam, and you've been listening to that Farrakhan dude, and you know, that's a bunch of hatred, and they talk about separation. How you gonna get this and make world peace and blah blah blah? So I was like, whoa. I said, let's talk about stories. Do you know the man's story?
Probably a couple blurbs he saw on something. Right.
So we got to talk about stories. So well, y'all talk about the separation shit, that Malcolm X stuff. He said, you know, I was no disrespect, man. So I said, listen, man, check this out. I said, you're talking about the whole separation thing, the whole, hey, we need to separate from white people. White people need to separate. Yeah, that's, you know, you talk about white supremacy. Well, that's black supremacy. Hold on. Let's deal with something real quick. So I had to tell him, I said, I'm going to tell you what the whole separation piece was. I said the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Malcolm, Marcus Garvey, all of them, they knew there was good white folk out there at that time. But they labeled all of them as devils. Why? And so I said, let me ask you this question. I'm going to do the paper bag test with you. I mean, the fruit test with you. And he said, what's that? I said, well, what's your favorite fruit? And he said, orange. He gave me oranges. I think he just gave me any fruit. He said oranges. So I said, all right. I said, peep game, bro. I said, listen, I'm going to give you 10 oranges straight from Florida off of the sweetest tree from Florida. It's known to be the sweetest tree, and they're the sweetest oranges. That's nice and big. I said, that's cool. And I'm going to give them to you in a paper bag, 10 of them. That's cool? He said, yeah. I said, all right, cool. I said, here's the rub, though. I said, 5 of them oranges was injected with the world's deadliest poison. Soon as you bite into it, it's a wrap. You gone, man. You're dead. It's a wrap. Soon as you bite into them. And the other 5 are clean, fresh, healthy, and sweet, ready to be eaten. And the thing is, I don't know which one. They're not marked, so I don't know which one's a poison and which one's a clean. But here go that paper bag. Here go this paper bag. Which one you going to do with it? He said, I'm going to throw this shit away. I said, exactly.
Whoa.
I said, so that's the reason why they had that. If you don't understand the situation.
Damn, man.
If you don't understand the situation, don't talk about it. But here's why I call them my friends. Because people be like, well, how are your friends and y'all having that conversation and they white?
Because that's what they the fucking the talks we should be having.
Talk to me about that.
Yes.
I'd rather have you. Man, look, my enemies are better friends than some of my friends. How? Because my enemy will tell me to my face, I can't stand you. And that's the real. That's what keeping it 100. But some of your friends will be like, I love you. And behind your back, they'd be like, I can't stand his ass.
Oh, man. I get that all the time.
So yeah, we had that conversation. But guess what? Our relationship is like this. Some of their friends don't understand how we type. But you want to know why? We have that talk. When you and I having this talk, this is how it starts.
That's who should be having that talk.
We supposed to be having this talk. We supposed to be having this conversation.
Yeah.
I want to sit down with a room of cops and be like, oh, I did another podcast, man. And the lady whose podcast I did, she actually works for the police department. And I'm talking to her the same thing I told you. She told me today, this is, man, this had to be 30 minutes before you and I start talking. She sent me a Facebook message and was like, yo, he wants to use the podcast for the new recruits so they can see and understand what's up, you know, and hear from the perspective of you, from an African-American male about the race relations, about the different layers that goes on psychologically with this, about what's going on, the truths, and everything. He was like, this is an incredible piece. And I was like, yo, go ahead, use it. I said, I don't care, use it. I said, because the conversation needs to be had. I said, hell, I'll fly to Texas and sit down and talk to y'all. You need to hear this, and I need to hear your shit. I do. I'm sick of being here. I'm sick of this right here, man. I do it with my students. You got GDs here and Blackstones, right? I'd be like, yo, y'all at war with one another. Do you even know why you at war with one another? No. Yeah, you think you do, but you just figure he wear blue and black, and he wear red and black, so y'all just enemies.
where I'm from, there's something like that. Pine Hills and Winter Garden are two cities that used to battle each other, and caught in the middle of those two cities was this, back in the day, really racist town called Ocoee. And you had this Ocoee white place. Actually, I'm doing this piece on Ocoee. It's called the Something Massacre. It was so bad, man. But there's Ocoee, and then on either side were these two towns. And when I was in high school, everybody knew it was Winter Garden versus Pine Hills, and then the Ocoee guys would get in the middle sometimes. And there were, I'm talking shootings, stabbings, fightings. Right. It was on. And, you know, everywhere from Washington, Carver Shores, Ivy Lane, Mercy Drive, all the way back to 9th Street, Center Street, Winter Garden. And people would be fighting. And I used to ask, I'm like, do you know why? Man, fuck that, man. West Side, that's where it's at. And I'm like, it's a basketball game. It was a basketball game 10 years ago. And it's still fighting now. And you're killing each other.
It's stupid. It's dumb. Listen, yeah. when the gangs in Chicago, first of all, let me explain something to you. The gangs in Chicago weren't first gangs. Listen to the term. Black Stones was originally Black Peace Stone Nation. Listen to the first two words. Black Peace Stone Nation. Stone meaning hard, rock, you know, you solid. Nation, a people. Black Peace, solid, together. The people are together. Black Peace Stone Nation. Then it wasn't Gangster Disciples for GDs. It was Growth and Development.
That's it. Yeah, you know your shit, man.
Growth and Development. So they originally was about peace and actually continuing the work that the Panthers did. Somehow, some way or another, in my personal opinion, and based off of some of the stories I've heard from some of the elders, infiltration got involved.
Sure.
And it was like, yo, we ain't letting y'all, ain't gonna be another repeat of the Panthers and none of this at the third. And somehow all this madness took place.
Well, I'm sure crack cocaine was helpful in the 80s too.
Oh, definitely. Oh my God. Crack cocaine, heroin. Oh, dude, listen.
No, I mean, that was the 80s,
my father,
man.
That's... was addicted to, look, man, I seen my father go through that struggle. And he told me straight up, he was like, he hated it. Hated it. When he finally got clean, man, he was just like, dude, he said, listen, I never want to see you in a jail and don't try nothing. I literally, my friends think I'm weird now. I don't drink right now. Like, literally. I'm embarrassed to say this a little bit. me and the fiance went out for a walk right when it became fall. And in Chicago, if you come to Chicago, you can do a thing called the River Walk. They have these restaurants and stuff on the river. And you can walk underneath the bridges and stuff. So I said, yo, I'm going to have a drink with the fiance. I'm gonna go for it. I'm going to have a drink. And I got some fruity drink.
Oh, no. All that sugar.
Bro, I tasted it and I'm like, because I've tasted liquor before, but I'm just like, I can't deal with it. But I said, I'm going to drink with her. Dude, all of a sudden, my lips got numb. I was buzzed. And, you know, there's dudes that would walk around the corner on us while we walking back to the car. And I'm in mode. I was just like, yo, I told her, I said, I'll never. She said, I'm a drive. And I was like, yeah, and I'm never, ever drinking again, ever. The last time I toasted with her at New Year's, because I proposed New Year's Eve. And I toasted with her and I sipped champagne and I put it down. She finished it for me. Bro, I don't smoke. I don't drink. I don't do none of that. You ask, yo, if you have drugs before, none. Nada. Zip. Zero.
Man, I'm like a fucking pharmaceutical cabinet in my history. I smoke weed right now and shit, but actually.
Listen, I wanted to. Now, this is the reason why I wanted to smoke weed at one point, because I heard that the THC had medicinal purposes that would help me with my asthma, because I had severe asthma at one point. And that's the reason why I wanted to. But the reason why I couldn't bring myself to it is because of my father. Yeah, I want to respond to you. I could not do it because of my parents put that everything drugs was related. Weed is crack.
Yeah, crack, yeah.
Crack.
I see. You know,
everything was crack.
Well, you're fighting the programming at an early age anyway, man. And if you're fine now, why add to it?
Yeah, so that's no need for me to do it. But I don't object to nobody doing it, because once again, remember, you got to research things. I'm like, well, I got friends that smoke weed and they good. They're not drug dealers and crack addicts and they count here killing people. So I started researching it and I'm like, yo, weed's a medicinal thing. You know, now you can abuse anything. Shit, you can die from drinking too much water. Yep. But, you know, so, but my thing is that, yo, so I don't look bad or look down on none of those type of things. My thing is, the only thing I would suggest to people is do your research, study, think for yourself. Learn how to think, do research, figure it out for yourself. And if it's meant for you, then do that shit. Excuse my language, but if it's meant for you, do that. If it's not meant for you, then don't. But don't judge. Don't judge because you don't know somebody's story. You know, don't judge. Now, act accordingly. If I'm in the street or in the club or somebody and somebody throws a punch at me, I'm not beating brakes off of them because I hate them. I'm defending myself. And I'm not finna keep hitting him. Once he's down and subdued, it should be a wrap. It was logical. Yo, man, no disrespect. This was a logical ass whooping. The minute it becomes an emotional one is when you're wrong because you lost control. Now, you can't help but have emotions. Something pisses you off, it pisses you off. But what you can do is control the actions to what that energy does after that. You know, I was so mad one year, dude. I was like 100, what was this, 2017? 7 years ago when I was, 30? Seven, 8 years ago. I never really lifted weights. I started lifting weights then. I was 168 pounds. So imagine 6'2", 168. I was so mad at somebody, dude, that I was ready to just say if I was the Hawk, Chicago would be leveled. You know, I was angry. I decided to take that energy and hit the gym. And I hit the gym every day. And a year later, dude, I was like 190 pounds and, you know, I got some good definition and, you know, the anger, it's nothing wrong with being angry. What you do with the anger is the issue. How you handle it. What do you do with the fire? Fire is a beautiful thing, but it can be used to destroy or it could be used to build some shit. So, you know, what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do? I can take this brick and throw it through a window, or I can take this brick and start laying a foundation. So, you know, what do you do with the emotion? So, you know, you got to think logically past the emotion. And then I execute when I execute the technique, it's like, yo, bro, this wasn't personal. Get them up out of there. There's nothing personal about it. The minute it becomes personal and it's super emotional is the minute you'll lose control. So all my suggestion to people is that do your best to find an anchor, center yourself, and become better thinkers. You know, I'm doing it every day. I'm doing my best to be a better thinker so I can be a better product of this society. So I don't embarrass my bloodline. I don't want to embarrass my blood. I don't want to embarrass my father and my mother and my grandmother and my grandfather and those people that put in hard work that came before me. And, you know, and I don't want to embarrass myself for the children and the youth, and I got kids. I don't want to embarrass my bloodline. So while I'm on this planet, I'm going to put in as much work as I possibly can. I'm going to try to benefit my community as much as I possibly can. And I'm going to do my best as being a good thinker as much as I possibly can, and fighting a good fight and being logical with my movement. All right. And do that shit in love, you know, fight in love. You know what I mean? I watched The Godfather like crazy. My man said one thing, don't hate your enemies. There's a reason for that. Because when you hate your enemies, you get emotional. Hate is an emotional thing, and you go mess around and make a mistake. So you don't hate your enemies. Love them. And understand that the move you make is not personal. It's about my benefit. You know, hey, listen, this ain't nothing personal, man. I just need to step away from you. You know, and I don't even think I have enemies. I just have obstacles just throughout life. Hey, man, you're in the way. Sorry, I got to step away from you. Hey, I got to move over here and do this now. Hey, I can no longer do that. Hey, I need to do this. You know, it's just thinking in a different light, man. We've been taught to be fucking robots. Excuse my language, what we have. We've been going to school and taught to memorize shit and be robots. When we were supposed to be learning in school is how to think, how to create, how to be artists. But that's not what we're learning. That's not what we are. And that's what I want to get us. That's where I would like for us to get to. Not where I'm going to get us. I didn't mean to say that. I mean, where I would like for us to get to. And I'm going to do my best to teach my students that. Be an artist, bro. You know, little sis, be an artist. Know how to think. Create your own business if you want to. If you want to work for someone, that's absolutely fine too. Don't take no stuff off of nobody. But not every fight is worth fighting. And when it is time to fight, you fight your heart out. You know, do your best to make the proper moves, make the proper adjustments throughout life so you can be successful and build. Don't build for your, like I like Dame Dash said this. He said, don't build for your first name, build for your last name. You know, so, you know, that's what we're supposed to do. You know, so.
And that, my friend, is what I call a cognitive fucking rampage, man. You went off, man. That is a cognitive rampage that I have. Man.
Yo, forgive me, everybody, if I was all over the place. I'm sorry.
I'm a stream of consciousness. This podcast is a stream of consciousness. Trust me, you're on the right podcast to be squirreling wherever the fuck you want to go, man. They follow you, man. The people on this show, these fans, these listeners, man, my friends, these are fucking some of the most cerebral people you'll meet, man. And I don't know why they listen to my shit. Maybe just to call me dumber, man. But I wouldn't.
Authentic. That's why. Listen, man, I didn't know what to expect when you hit me up, but I see it. It's authentic.
That's funny, bro. That's the book right there, and it says a dose of authentic revelation, man.
Yes, sir. It's authentic, man. We need that, like, for real. Like, everything is commercialized now, and everybody sees it, man. Everything is superficial. Where's the authenticity of anything anymore? This right here feel like grassroots. It's art. It feel like hip hop. Like, just the show, it do. It feel like what hip hop was before it got turned out.
Now, I freestyle like crazy, man. I mean, it's the only pursuit I never pursued. But when I look back on regrets, man, I know I still didn't ever lose because the experiences that make my moment create my perception to create my future. I make my decisions. And if you would, just pause for a moment. I ain't no rap star. I'm just a poetry boy just like all y'all are. But I'm out here living my life, walking it existentially, and I promise y'all, I'm gonna live this shit lovely.
You need to go to Chicago, man. Look me up so we can go. I take you to a couple of spots. You're gonna be like, yo.
I'll eat somebody up, man. I'll eat them up, man.
Look, I used to look just to give some people my background. Like, yo, I was a b-boy when I was younger, man. I used to go to a radio station here called WHBK. It was at the University of Chicago, and we would go freestyle the Wednesdays, Thursday, man. Dude, we was up there every day almost, man. And you could get on the radio, just a local MC. Dude, my boy also had a radio show at Chicago State University, which is here in the city. Unfortunately, it's still closing, but it's a black university. It's a very good university for the community, but they just couldn't hold the budget for some reason. And it's sad that it's closing because it's really served the community well. For the kids that were going to that school. And so, but anyway, he had a radio show there and he had a battle. Dude, I won the battle contest literally like 7 times in a row. Yeah, his name was Dwan Brown. My boy Dwan Brown, he had a radio show here, man. And yeah, man, I used to rhyme back in the day. I used to be, if you're into hip hop, look up a dude named Quasar and Typical Cats.
All right.
Those were some of the guys I used to hang out with heavy. Quay, Hellscent, The Outer Limits. Yeah, man, it was a great time back in the day, bro. But before you let me go, I gotta ask you this question.
All right, hit man.
You're a martial artist, man. You're a martial artist. And I've been wanting to ask you this question. Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather. Gotta know what your thoughts are. Everybody's talking about this, man.
Boxing match.
We already know what's gonna happen in the cage.
Okay, I was gonna say, yeah, all right.
Oh, is this a wrap?
Yeah. Boxing, I don't think Conor gets him. And if he hits him, maybe. Yeah. If he hits him, maybe. You know, maybe. You know, but Conor's quick and he's accurate as shit and it's strong.
Oh, Conor's a beast. Look, I love Conor because I love the fact that Conor studies the game on another level.
And his story, bro. His story makes it even better, man. That just I admire that motherfucker, man.
Yeah. No, Conor's a beast, bro. I friends of mine here in the boxing community and in the martial arts community, they've been talking about that like crazy. I posted on my Facebook page. It's hilarious because everybody's like, oh, this is bullshit. This is garbage. This is terrible. Entertainment wise, I'm gonna watch it.
I'm watching. Oh, I'm watching.
I'm gonna watch it. But
no, yeah. I'm gonna watch Chris Brown beat the shit out of Soulja Boy too. I'm gonna watch that. Chris Brown.
Listen. Real talk though. Real
has Soulja been undercover doing some shit?
Bro, I'm gonna tell you something right here. I personally want to see that happen. This is the reason why, on a deeper level. I personally think that'll affect Chicago in a positive.
All right.
If you start seeing more and more of these dudes get on camera boxing it out, the shorties out here follow them. They leaders.
Yeah, oh, shit. So they put the gun down. They just get in the gym.
I personally think you still going to have shootings here and there, but I personally think it'll start catching on.
That's fucking brilliant.
I think it'll start catching on because I'm not trying to diss the shorties, but a lot of them are followers. And a lot of them, if they start seeing Soulja Boy, Chief Keep Nas locked up. But if they start seeing the little Dirks and the young Bibbies, Lil Bibby and all these dudes, whenever they have a beef, like, yo, man, hey, we going to get on pay-per-view or whatever. We going to put them gloves on. I'm going to whoop yo, la, 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 la. Shorties nowadays, I bet you start catching on like, yo, I'm going to tell them that because a lot of them see themselves as that. And like Wiz Khalifa, I remember when Wiz got real hot. When I was teaching, I was working with the band program at Harper High School. If you're not familiar with Harper, Harper is the first turnaround school in Chicago. The year I came, the year right before that, I want to say it was either between 28 or 33 kids all were shot from that one school. Jeez. From that one school. Yes, sir. From that Jesus. One school. As a matter of fact, I lost two mentees from that school to gun violence. They were kidnapped and murdered. Yeah, I've lost several kids that I've worked with personally, several. So you know, just ask, man. Know somebody's story.
I like what you brought up though, man. My grandfather was a teacher for a long, long time, and what he kept was boxing gloves in the damn classroom. And yeah. The two kids, he would glove them up, put the thing on them, walk them out back. They'd start swinging. They'd be exhausted. He'd go, no, keep going.
Yes,
keep going.
That's how. Look, that's believe it or not. Listen. Well, let me finish with Harper. What happened was at Harper, man, I did the boxing piece up there, and I forgot where I was going with that. But anyway, yeah, just going to your grandfather. Yes, that's exactly how you should do it. That's how I got the respect of my students. Actually, when I was at Harper and Chatham Academy, man, some of my students was looking at me like, "Who is this dude?" Because I was new, and they like to challenge you. They think you're some type of sub. Man, who is this dude? A clown. So what happened was I would take him to the lunchroom. I have a bag full of gloves. And I'm going to tell you a cool story about the band program after this. Real quick, too. But I took my bag of gloves and I said, yo, I'm going to let y'all spar. So, yo, we can spar, Mr. Q. They call me Mr. Q. Mr. Q, we going to spar? Yo, y'all can fight each other. I'm going to give y'all a minute around. All right, cool. So they go at it. But here's the deal. When I say stop, you got to stop. They'd be like, all right, cool. We'll stop. And I swear they listen. I'd be like, stop, break. And then they come back to it and they spar again. I already knew that it was going to take one of them to say, come on, Mr. Q, let's get the gloves. And I play it off. No.
Make him get louder. Yeah.
Yep. As soon as he put the gloves on him, you know, it would always be another adult staff member in the room. I had the dean in the room just with the Chatham kids. They didn't know that I fight, that I've been fighting Golden Gloves, karate tournaments, kickboxing. I've been doing this, dude, since I was 7. But I started competing since I was 15. Dude, wear they little behinds out because they don't know how to fight. Hey, wear them out. Next thing you know, yo, Mr. Q got hands. Oh, my God, yo. And I swear, after that, it was nothing but love. Because they respect the alpha. It's the alpha male piece. They like, yo, yeah. Man, you... I can go to the school right now and be like, hey, yo, I need 5 of y'all to move them tables. They'd be like, all right, we got a cue. I'm talking about dudes that look at you like, yeah. Yo, who's this? Like,
well, they're missing that model, that male model that shows you how to carry that alpha male. A lot of males do have the alpha in them, but they don't know how to carry it and use it.
Yeah, man, use it to a positive. You know, they love that. Young boys, they like to fight. There's nothing wrong with that. Use the thing that a lot of people don't realize about the martial arts is that it's really weird. I don't know what it is exactly, but that what you would consider a violent component makes you more peaceful.
Yeah, because I'll tell you why. It's because people are louder. Like I always use this example. If there's a pit bull in the corner and me and you start closing in on it, what's it start doing?
Yep.
Right? It's coming. Is it angry? No, it's afraid.
Right.
It's afraid. Right. So if the guy is barking and talking shit, what I hear is fear, and fear comes from a lack of competence. And so if you're not competent knowing how to fight, then you got to bark so people get away from you. But if you know what you're doing, then I don't have to. That's right. Remember when I told you if the quiet dude's sitting there and there's a big motherfucker running his mouth, I ain't fucking with the little quiet dude. I'm going to fight that 7'2", 400-pound motherfucker. Because if I lose, okay. But if I lose to that little motherfucker who I know been fighting his whole life, I lose. I'm done. I'm done.
Yes, man. And it's and it just brings you back to that peak. So I tell people, yo, the kids, the reason why we got connected is I work with them. I tire them out. I don with them. I don't talk to them crazy. I don't treat them like babies. I treat them like – because remember, when you're at 9, 10 years old, you want to be an adult anyway. You want to drive the car. You want to call shots. You know, and I talk to them as such. I don't call them babies. I'm like, yo, man, you're a young man.
Yeah.
You know, and then I talk to him. I give him responsibility. You know what I'm saying? Pat him on his back. Yo, what's up, bro? Yo, mess with him. And, man, to this very day, I have youth with me that are now 17 and 18, and they started with me when they were 9.
Mm.
And they're
all right, man. I normally wouldn't. No, did I cut you off my phone?
No, wait.
I normally wouldn't say this because I don't like to, I don't know, influence anyone's choice, but listening to you talk, man, and the passion that you have, it moves me, and I'm hard to move like that. And I think someone told me also a long time ago that you can't change the game when you're inside of it, and you can only change it so far. And so if you're lined up in that suit, well, I don't think you can do much change. And you're too loud and loud in that positive way. You're too much of a force to be on the force, man. And you can't make that kind of change in it. Out of it is how you make that change. And yes, change can be made within the force 100%. And that's where it starts. But it's too much, man. I like the idea of you going to teach them about the community.
Yeah.
Rather than the reverse, man. Find it there, bro. Find it there.
But that's where I've decided. Like I said, that's what I've decided to do. Look, man. Right now, I have a few officers, or now the potential officers, they're still applicants. Oh, yeah, definitely. Excuse me, I'm sorry. No, they're potential officers. And I'll just say this, man. They love the class, and they love what I give, and I'm gonna continue giving it. Like, yo, listen, this is what this is. They love it. So. Do me a favor. Text Nicole. Let her know I'm on it.
I got to get to running anyway soon, bro. I got to get down to this.
I apologize, brother.
No worries.
But yeah, I'll say this. They love what I'm giving. And I'd rather just give that. I'd rather just give you those components that help you be a better cop.
That's what they need. And that simple is what they fucking need. But I think they need that competence about what it's really like for it. So, I mean, yeah, dude, please do that, man. I mean,
I have officers that I've trained already before. I've helped officers who are officers now get on the force with passing the power test already.
And hey, still working class. Sorry, man. You excite the shit out of me, man. Sorry. You get me going, man. If you ever want any other side work, man, I've never offered this before in my life, but we're launching our new company, man, Dollar Mental Health Club, dog. It's a good side thing for just, I know you got, you know, a lot of things going on. But please be a mental trainer with us, man. That's on. Please.
Dude, I would love to, man. Is there a website? Or
Watch this. Hired. Please. You know. Yeah. It. Please.
I'm with it. Like it, seriously, I'm with it. Just if you can send me the link so I can just
do
whatever.
Yeah.
I'm with it. Man, this is my thing. If it's about veteran people.
Yep.
And where I can give back. And I'm growing as well.
And you get
whatever it is.
And you get paid well for it.
Hey, I'm gonna be real with you. It ain't never. I'll just say this, and it's not to say that you're saying this, but I just want to put this out there. It's never been about the money. My fiance had to get on me, bro, because everything I was doing was for free.
Yeah,
free. She was like, "Yo," she was like, "You are so altruistic," and it was like, "Yo, man, it ain't about that." And so I want to let's just, the only reason I want to tell you that is because it ain't about the money. If I'm gonna do it, it's really about the people. Like, it really isn't. It's cool to get paid for something.
You still gotta feed them little ones, bro. And if you can do good work doing it, damn right.
And I appreciate it, man. I do, but I just wanted to let you know that, like, yo, trust me. When I was working a band program, dude, I was making $300 a it was $345 every 2 weeks.
Dude, we could talk forever, bro. I gotta go. I'm gonna get in trouble.
Yeah, man. I just put that out there just to tell people out there, you know, I'm not saying don't get paid. I'm just saying,
isn't that fucked up?
Make sure you go hard to the right place.
That's fucked up. We pay all the people that do all the help, the shit money. Even cops, they get paid shit. I don't care for what they do. They get paid garbage. Teachers get paid garbage. But they have summers off. I'm like, they could get shot.
Look, let me just say this, and I'm going to let you go because I know you got to go, and we both got busy days. Look, I'm going to just say this, yo. The school I was at, the teachers, I think, were getting paid $15 an hour.
Jesus.
And they are committed. When I say committed, I ain't never seen the commit. I'm talking about, bro, I've seen so much. When I say commitment, I'm talking about commitment. Like, I'm talking about
spending their own $15 an hour. Oh, my God, even further.
Dude, man, I have a kid right now that I worked with. He was homeless in the streets. Now, here's why he was homeless. Father found out he was gay, put him out in the street. Kid was a straight-A student. He was getting robbed and whooped, literally.
Yeah.
While he walked the block. And we drove the whole weekend trying to find a place that would take him, like, different homes. And then the fiance, she wasn't my fiance at the time, but I still call her my wife. She, at the time, was like, listen, we'll make a bed for him here. I'm like, that's what they have to do. You go and finish school, bro. We got to have that. We got to continue that. That's the only way we going to get better, man. It's the only way out here going to get better. We got to put in work. I know it's hard. I know everybody's busy. But, man, find a way to slow your mind down, come to some type of center, breathe for a second, and even if it's just for 5 minutes, change somebody's life, man. I'm telling you, help. We need help.
Dude, that's fuck, I think I love you, bro. I think I fucking love you, man. Like, that's you real, man. You need your own podcast, man.
I'll be real with you. I'm
you want help? We'll set you up. Me and Steve, the cognitive, we'll set you up, man. You need a fucking microphone, man.
Yo, I saw your request. Send it again to me, or I'm gonna send it to you. And I would love you to link up with me on Facebook, especially on different areas. And if you ever come to Chicago, man, yo, please, I'm gonna show you around the city and introduce you to some people, man.
How about this? I'll just come. Fuck it. I'll come up there here and probably the next couple months. I'll just come see you after all that snow goes away. Too, when that come snow on. Goes away, I'm going to come up there.
Please. Come on, man. Let's
and
do
if
it.
You're ever in Florida, man, come here and I'll show you my hood, man.
What part? What part of Florida are you in again?
Orlando, man.
You right? Dude, I got to come to Orlando. Hey, I want to take my kids. Is it Disney World?
Yeah. come see the mouse, man. Come see the mouse.
My daughter's in love with the mouse. I'd be like, all right, man.
Yeah, you got to.
Like, all right. So I got to take them there.
Yeah, that's the checkoff.
Look, one's in love with the mouse, and the other one's in love with the little red dude. I don't even want to say his name. I don't even want to say the guy's name. It's just like, oh, my God. So you know what I show her? I let her wait. You know what I mean? I try to get her to watch, you know, Dragon Ball Z with me. You know? just different things like that. Like
the little red dude.
Sorry, let Goku be your motivation.
the little red dude, man. Come on, man. I'm going to get you a t-shirt. Say the little red dude.
You know, at least Big Bird was, you know, my motivation. This little red thing.
Big Bird scared the fuck out of me, man. That's a big-ass yellow bird. Fuck that shit. That was weird, man. Fucking Sesame Street was a bad acid trip, man. That's fucked up, man.
Well, yo, man, it was a pleasure. I really loved and enjoyed this talk, man. And
hey, man, my mic's open anytime. We're going to get you on your own, man. Seriously, you need a fucking podcast. It's not fucking hard. It doesn't cost that much, man. I'll walk you through it. We'll get you up. You need to be on the fucking mic. And please, anytime you need a mic, hit me up. You got mine.
Appreciate it, man. I really do. And whenever you come to Chicago, just know you got a place to lay your head. Like, seriously, I'm going to show you around the city. This is how I get down.
Do you know Michael Wood Jr.?
Michael Wajudi. That
sounds an activist. He's been up in Chicago. He was a cop that spoke out in Baltimore against what was going on. He's getting a lot of shit now, but he's a fucking man, dude. I think he's going to run for sheriff of Oakland in California.
I'd have to see him.
Yeah, check him out. He was on the podcast.
Familiar. I'll be honest, the name sounds familiar, but I can't picture a face at the moment.
Yeah, he was a big movement, man. He came on the show, too, and was talking about Baltimore and stuff back then when that was going down. Okay. And he's been in Chicago a lot, man. He does a lot of stuff there, man. I maybe hook you two up with the activism, what he's doing, but check him out.
Yeah, please. I'll say this. The activist world is small, but it's huge, too.
Yeah.
So, like, here's the sad thing. Let me just say this before I go. Yo, stop bickering over petty BS, man. Especially when we all trying to have the same mission. This is what I mean by that. I've seen we talk about the gangs out here and the gangs in the world. They gang banging and they against each other. Yo, man, stop religious gang banging because I see it. You know, stop religious gang banging. You know, and I'm not even talking about Muslim versus Christian. I'm talking about church versus church. You know, which is ridiculous. Then Muslim versus Christian. Yo, if you man have a conversation. You know, stop that. Stop association gang banging. Yo, I'm a Delta. I'm an AKA. I'm a Sigma. I'm a Kappa. Stop all that garbage. And stop the whole gangbanging amongst activists, man, as far as, hey, I'm with Black Lives Matter, and this group is with such and such and such, and, you know, we don't really get with them, but, you know, but y'all are on the same protest and same line. Stop that, man. We got to come to heal and unite, and that's the only way we're going to be successful in this world and making sure that we're not being oppressed and abused by a system that's not for us. So stop that, man. I just really wanted to go ahead and say that. Yo, stop all that madness. Come to the table and talk. Talk about it. Hell, if you got to, box it out. I don't care. But somehow, man, get over your ego and this garbage and come together and be peace. Please. I encourage y'all, implore y'all. And if y'all ever see me on that garbage, you got the right to check me. You have the right to pull me up. You have the right to get in my face and say, Q, you bogus. You got the right to challenge me and say, yo, Q, I need you to step in the ring, bro, because I saw what you did and you fell off your post. And you left your post, fell off your square, and you allowed this to happen when you was right there. You didn't do your job. We have to hold each other accountable. You have the right to do that. And we have to do that with each other and really build and grow. And that's the only way we're going to be successful with one another and have and make anything really happen. So I just wanted to say that, man, before I let you go. So
another cognitive rampage, bro. You've been dropping them for 3 hours, man. Damn. I do got to go. I got this fucking event thing I got to go do too now. I'm already late.
You know what I'm going to go do? I'm going to go chill with my kid real quick because I'm at my mother's house. You know, she watches my daughter for me throughout the week sometimes. And then I'm going to be real with you. I'm going to go play chess and then tell him about this.
Yeah, well, it'll be on YouTube. The minute we hit stop, it'll process. It'll be on YouTube, and then we'll post it to the podcast in a couple days. It'll go on iTunes and all over the place.
Word. I bet, man. Thank you, man. Thank you.
Where do people look you up, man? Web, Twitter, all that stuff.
Cool. Well, have a beautiful day, man.
I don't think you heard me. Where does everybody look you up? Your Twitter, all that stuff.
My Facebook account is Mark Quinn McDonald. That's MarQuinn. You can also look me up on Twitter at Mark Quinn McDonald, MarQuinn. McDonald is spelled like the restaurant, MCDONALD. My Facebook page for the martial arts school is Quantum Martial Arts and Fitness. Okay, Quantum Martial Arts and Fitness. You'll see, you should see a man kicking with a red triangle and a Q. You'll see that whole piece. And you can go to the website, which is qmartialarts.com. The website is still, you know, being built. It's up and live, but, you know, forgive me, you know, I'm not good with websites and stuff like that. So I'm trying to, you know, hook that up. But you can go in there.
Hey, I got you.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, man. So, and what else? Oh, and my Instagram is Mark Quinn McDonald. Once again, everything is Mark Quinn McDonald or Quantum Martial Arts again on Instagram. So, yeah.
Yeah, we got a lot of martial arts fans, man. A lot of listeners that are big into MMA, man. So, yeah, a lot of people.
We need to have a talk about that one day, man, because a friend of mine said he's going to do a podcast about that. It's going to be, it's going to be one of the realest talks ever. And especially on a certain subject of a certain man that people get super sensitive about, which is Bruce Lee. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I know where that's going. Like, all right, man. I really got to roll, you beautiful person.
Thank you, man. Go ahead. Take care of your business. Much love. And I'll talk
to you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You're a fucking beast. My people, y'all all going to be hearing from this dude a lot. You're going to hear us. Think about the name of your show. Start to get to work about how you want to do it, because we're going to set you up here soon.
Yes, sir, man. I appreciate it. Indeed. And keep in touch, please. Like, definitely.
Dog. Right. Murderous. Of course, man. Of course, man. Thank you so much, man.
Yes, sir. Holler at you later. Peace.